And good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with me, Julie Calamine, and my co-host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm fine. How have you been this lovely week?
I'm great, but it feels almost like spring breakup, and it's only the second week of January.
It's so true. We've been moving up and up and up the mountain in order to go skiing all this wet, warm weather.
Yeah, although I'm really, really glad to see some of it sliding off the roofs.
It's been dumping at my house. Boom, 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 boom. My little dog is scared out of his wits some days. It's frightening. How do the cats do?
The cats just sleep through it as long as the propane heater's running.
So, very good. Cats may be a little smarter than dogs. Yeah. Well, we've got a really wonderful morning show this morning. It actually includes two guests. Would you like to tell us about them, Phil?
We do. For the first half of the show this morning, we have two women in from the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, Britta Meyerly, the Assistant Program Coordinator, and Nancy Schmidt, our Winter Program Coordinator. Good morning and welcome to the show, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And then after the bottom of the hour, we're going to play a previously recorded interview with Rich Landers.
That's true. And normally we chat on and on about our week and a bit about the weather, but these are pretty packed interviews, so we'll just go ahead and go right into them.
I think the weather could be summed up with one or two words.
Snow, rain, snow, rain.
Yep, there you
and
go.
And warm. Very good.
So as Julie suggested, let's just launch right in and talk a little bit first about the history of the Scotchman Peaks. This month is important in the history of the Scotchman Peaks. Britta, tell us about that.
This month is very important for the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. It's our 13th anniversary this month. So we started way back in 2005 with a group of citizens that believed that the Scotchman should be designated as congressional wilderness that's in the forest plan. Our mission is to protect the Scotchman Peaks for future generations through wilderness designation, ongoing stewardship, and education. And we've got some members since 2005 that are so believe in that mission so much that they are still with us today. I'm pretty new to the group, but it's nice to have those people that have that that history.
And how long have you been with Friends of Scotchman, Britta? It seems like a while now.
Right? Some days.
Yes.
So it's been almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years in April. So not that long, but some days starting to get my feet under me a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
And tell us a little bit about your background and interest and role with the organization.
So this is my first time working in the conservation arena. My background's actually in community and economic development. I've got a master's in tourism, which plays kind of nicely. It fits in both areas, I think. And I moved here a couple of years ago with my husband from Colorado to escape the very long ski lines. and when I started looking for a job up here, I saw the Friends had this opening and thought, well, I could really make a difference working with them. So that was pretty exciting. I feel like some of the things we do, like the stewardship work, is really important for the environment and for protecting the wilderness character of the area. I think that designating the Scotchmans would be really beneficial to the local economy and area residents as well. And on a personal note, we moved here for the great outdoors, and so I'd like to protect that.
Yeah, preserve as much as possible.
And there's another personal reason you're so interested these days.
I may have a recently turned one-year-old at home that I would like to protect the Scotchmans for her as well, so she can experience them how we can.
Right. It's not just for us. It's for future generations.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, Nancy, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. I came to North Idaho in 2006 and moved from Pittsburgh and have an undergraduate degree in recreation administration. Worked in a lot of day camps, wilderness camps, was a low ropes and high ropes facilitator. And then I went into the mental health arena, have a master's degree in health education and a PhD in psychiatric epidemiology. My very first outing here in North Idaho was with the Friends of the Scotchman Peaks. And so I've been a friend for years.
Longer than Britta. You're a newer employee, but an older friend.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, that's great.
And you're both working on programs, the stewardship and education and outreach side of the organization's work. Give us a bit of an overview on the importance of that, Britta.
As sort of an advocacy organization, we also do a lot of stewardship and outreach and outdoor education, because we want to be part of the community, not just these people saying, hey, we want wilderness designation. We want to have conversations with people. And we feel like one of the best ways for people to want to help protect the Scotchmans for future generations is to get them out in the Scotchmans. You can't help but fall in love with them once you're out there. And so we do a lot of trail work. Because, man, you really like those trails if you help build it.
This is true. Yeah.
You've got an investment there. But we're also trying to protect the wilderness character of the area through projects like white bark pine seed sowing that we did in collaboration with the Forest Service. We've done some weed projects looking at biocontrols, setting loose little bugs that eat St. John's wort. It's an invasive weed species. So we kind of run the gamut of stewardship work. We also have hike series to get folks out for adults and for kids, and outdoor education, both for adults and children. And Nancy, I think, will probably be talking about the children a little bit more.
Yeah, we're going to get to the winter tracks program in a little bit, but your role as assistant program, your manager, you're involved in most all of those things.
You know, I do a little bit of everything. So, yep, some projects I manage from the grant all the way to with the volunteers and then finishing out that grant report, and with others, I maybe help out a little bit here and there. So,
yes, I've certainly heard from you, Britta, whenever I've agreed to volunteer on a project like the invasive weed control, and I've recently heard from Nancy scheduling things for winter tracks.
Yep, once Looking you're on our volunteer list, we like to contact you.
We do hear from you. It's great.
So if folks are listening and they want to volunteer, how can they go about that?
You know, they can, there's multiple ways you can contact us. You can get on our website, which is scotchmanpeaks.org, or you can email us. There's a few different ways to email us. You can email info@scotchmanpeaks.org for general things. And you can also email me, Britta, B-R-I-T-T-A, @scotchmanpeaks.org. And if you want to be consistently updated about what volunteer opportunities we have going on, you can hop on our website, which was scotchmanpeaks.org, and click on Become a Friend and sign up to get our weekly insider email. That has lots of volunteer opportunities, outdoor education things we have going on. Definitely the way to stay in the loop.
Right. Lots of information about things to do. And as you've said, volunteering is easy to do through that site.
Yes, it is.
And there's always something happening. I know Julie follows that insider pretty regularly.
I sure do. Keeps me busy, Phil. Does. But there is a big event coming, Britta, that we're going to be talking about, and we'll be interviewing. we'll be listening to a pre-recorded interview of later. But why don't we touch on that for a moment?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, our 13th anniversary is this month. And we decided we needed to do something big. So on the 13th, we're celebrating 13 on the 13th. So this Saturday, we have the recently retired outdoor editor of the Spokesman Review, Rich Landers, who is quite well known in the area in the outdoors group. He will be giving us a presentation on 40 rich years in the great outdoors, followed by kind of a Q&A and discussion facilitated by Chris Bessler, who I think probably a lot of your listeners know.
Yeah, one of our regular morning show hosts on Wednesday mornings, if you listen to the show every day of the week.
Yes, he is, and Chris has enjoyed the outdoors, and I think he'll do a great job for the evening at the Panada.
Yeah. We are very excited. So if people are interested in getting tickets, there are a few different outlets. You can get them through our website, scotchmanpeaks.org, and then click on events. They can also get them at Eichert's. If you're all the way up in Bonner's Ferry, you can get them at Bonner Books. He is one of our sponsors. We're very happy to have him. And you can also get them the night of the event at the door.
All right. And it should really be a great event. He's such an interesting writer and now retired. We'll get to hear about his plans for the future and some of his most interesting happenings over those 40 years. I'm looking forward to that.
And so that's Saturday night at the Panada Theater. Doors open at?
Doors open at 6:30. Show starts at 7:30.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Get there early because you'll want a good seat.
Exactly.
I would think. Yes.
General admission. So, yep, get there early.
Right. Well, Britta, you have a lot going on, and you're in the office day to day. I know that. But Nancy, your work is a little bit different, isn't it? You're going to be outside with kids.
Yes. We have a winter tracks program, and we work with local schools to bring youth into the parks and do a lot of different programming modules. This is our fourth consecutive year. we started this because a lot of volunteer energy during the winter from Friends of Scotchman Peaks participation is started a carnivore study back with the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. And they wanted to continue to see that type of thing happen with students in classrooms. So we brought the classroom outdoors for them. It's grown from just a couple of outings in Idaho to four counties and three states and close to 400 students that we had last year.
It's pretty amazing, and it really does fit well with your mission, doesn't it?
It really does. We have the Winter Tract program is a day-long field trip experience for students in the counties surrounding the Scotchman Peaks. So what we do is we have a program. It's set to get the students out in the field during the winter months in order to deepen their sense of place, build community, and connect to the outdoor world through experiential education. And students learn about a variety of different topics. We usually have about four modules. One of them would be tracking, learning how animals get around in the winter. We have a mammals, where they look at pelts and skulls. We have a tree identification module, and we also have, we mix it up depending on the school and what they want. We are setting up a bait station at one of our Winter Treks events so that we can put a camera up and monitor what kind of animals come and go, and then the classroom can look at those visuals.
Fun.
So, there's a lot of learning modules. They may vary. But we try to work it to what the school is asking for.
And excuse me if you've already mentioned this, but what age kids are they, and do they all come from the public schools?
They do come from public schools. Some are coming from Spokane. We do some in the Lake Pend'Oreille School District. It varies in age, mostly high school students, but we do have a couple schools that are bringing 7th, 8th grade. We just did one in Sanders County. We had about 50 students from the Knoxon and Trout Creek area.
Wow.
And they were seventh graders, and they were very engaged. It was a wonderful group, wonderful day.
And what was the topic for those kids?
They had tree identification. We had Reagan from Kinitu Land Trust, who was one of our partners, came to do birds. So we looked at winter birds. We did tracking. And what was the other one we had, Phil? Tracking ID, tree ID.
Tree identification.
Some Forest Service.
Pretty standard.
Learning how to, figure out how much board feet you can get from a tree.
Oh, right. And
identifying the trees. The students were really engaged in that.
Kids love the hands-on stuff, whether it's tree bark or mammal pelts or bird pieces. They love hands-on.
Right. Absolutely. And a bait station sounds bait particularly station. Exciting.
Well, it uses all of your senses, including your sense of aroma.
There you go.
So tell us about who instructs these and how do you find them?
We get volunteers with expertise. We use the Lands Council. Round Lake State Park has been very instrumental in helping us to use their location. We work with the Forest Service for their campgrounds and volunteers. Kinitu Land Trust, we're using one of their properties on the border of Idaho and Montana for a couple Winter Treks programs in March. So we have volunteers mostly. We're always looking for volunteers to help with an expertise in any of these areas. And we're willing to engage any type of opportunity that we haven't mentioned. We have sometimes avalanche expertise. We have orienteering expertise. So those types of things, we're always looking for volunteers. And as Britta said, you can find that information on Winter Treks. My email is wintertreks@scotchmanpeaks.org. Or you can just go to our website and find volunteer opportunities.
And you mentioned the schools in Sanders County. Who are some of the other school partners?
We have a school in Lake City, our city schools in Spokane. We have a Mead Alternative High School. We have Sego Elementary. We use Clark Fork Junior and Senior High. We'll be doing a Winter Treks over in Montana and Idaho on the Kinitu Land Trust border.
That's a lot of schools.
We have about six programs scheduled for the Bonner County area. Mm.
Is it part of the curriculum? Is it optional for the kids, or are all the kids that when a school signs on, are the kids all going?
It should be. It's up to the teachers.
Okay.
You know, but mostly there's an intention.
Good.
There's an intention for the teachers that are interested in this.
I think the kids want to get out there.
I would think so.
They had a blast this week.
It's almost a reward for good behavior.
Right.
time off in the great outdoors for good behavior.
Mostly good behavior. Yeah. And Nancy, can you tell us what a day of winter tracks looks like for a student?
Sure. They arrive. We give them a little talk. The whole idea is to have fun and to educate and to have them enjoy the outdoors. So appropriate clothing, obviously, is a big issue because they are going to be in the cold. We do set fires and have warming spots for them. But they come in. We have them rotate through the modules. So if we have four modules, we have them rotate 40 minutes each module. We do a lunch for them. Sometimes we'll include some games or activities at lunchtime. Snowshoeing, we bring our snowshoes and provide snowshoes for the students to be able to get around in the deeper snow so that they can wander off the main field and see a little bit more of the natural world.
That's a lot of snowshoes.
That's a lot of snowshoes.
Right. For kids.
And usually, you know, the day goes from maybe 9, 10 o'clock till about 2 o'clock. So... Mm-hmm. We fit in four modules and a lunch in that small period of time.
Wow. And then back to their school and home.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. That is a big day.
It's an awesome day.
Yes.
What a great deal of fun. So if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 FM KRFY, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. And this morning we're talking with Britta Miley and Nancy Schmidt from the Friends of Scotchman Peaks about the 13th anniversary stewardship work year-round, and particularly the youth education aspect of the Winter Tracks program. And picking that back up, Nancy, tell us a little bit from your perspective as an educator who's been involved for years with outdoor education, the importance of that kind of experiential process for the kids.
I think the hands-on piece is truly important. You would think, you know, a lot of these students, you would think they'd lived in North Idaho most of their life, that they know the appropriate things to do in the outdoors, and many of them do not. Many of them haven't had the ability to get out and really know the proper clothing, the proper how to defend yourself if the weather changes, you know, how to be prepared for an emergency, you know, identifying certain animals that may be around your vicinity. All of those things are really, really important for children to connect to our natural world and our natural environment.
Right. And do you find that they really do need to learn that? They haven't learned.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
It's an important component to their education here in Northern Idaho.
Truly.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And it takes a whole host of, sounds like, experienced and trained volunteers. Tell us a little bit about where you draw the individuals from who teach.
A lot of our volunteers are knocking down my door. I want to get involved. I want to get involved, which is really exciting because we have a lot of people with some wonderful expertise, the Forest Service. A lot of the teachers that are interested in this are the people that are behind this, Chris Bachman from the Lands Council. You know, he really wants to train his students to be ready for the forestry contest that comes up in May.
Right.
And so this is a good, you know, the earlier it gets them started, the more. And you're looking at students creating a passion about something. Perhaps this is a career they may choose. So, you know, we're also always involved in helping students think about their futures and the future of where they're going to be living and preserving some of this environmental places that we love.
Right, broadening their horizons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it does sound like you're not short on volunteers and also not short on trained volunteers. And why don't you just let us know again if folks wanted to get in touch with you and share their skills with you and help out, how would they do that?
They could email me at wintertracks, that's WINTERTRACKS, at scotchmanpeaks.org.
Very good.
Very good. And some of the same volunteers show up during the summertime, right, Britta?
Oh, definitely. We have volunteers with energy all year long, which is exciting. We're always looking for new folks to help out, but we don't turn people away that want to hang out with us. But we have a lot of overlap. We've had people that were doing the white bark pine seeding that or seed sowing this summer that are now helping out with tree ID. Retired foresters are an amazing resource to have. We have had Julie help us out with our weeds.
I did.
Identifying and tracking those nasty, noxious weeds in the area.
After having learned them all from my own backyard.
Right.
Very helpful.
After taking the weed training from Ken Thacker, I went home and felt very, very sad about my yard.
As
sometimes
we all.
You just don't want to know.
It's so true.
But I think that's one of the wonderful things, too, that volunteers can show up without a lot of knowledge and learn from those who have a lot and have an enriched experience as well.
Oh, I definitely agree, Phil. I think volunteers and staff, I've learned a ton from our volunteers. So I think with Nancy, she's got lots of volunteers that help with the specific training modules for the kids. But then there's also volunteers that just float or help with food or help pour hot cocoa. So if you feel like you don't have expertise in a specific area enough that you could teach, that's okay. We still want to hang out with you and we still would love to have your help.
And guess what? You might learn quite a bit and become a volunteer that has expertise for the next volunteering event.
Exactly. That is so true, Julie.
That's right.
It does take a community to bring a bunch of kids through winter tracks.
It does. Yeah, yes. It takes a village, right? Yeah.
That's right. Well, as we're wrapping up our interview, because we'll be moving on to the pre-recorded Rich Landers interview, I'd like to thank you both for joining us this morning. And if you'd like to have any final last mini conclusional statements, share that with us, and then we'll go on to a music break.
Well, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it. I just want to put a last final plug in for our 13th anniversary event with Rich Landers this Saturday. Starts at 7:30. Doors open at 6:30 at the Panada downtown. The big Panada, too. Not the little Panada, the big Panada.
So it's a big event.
It is a big event.
Rich is going to pack them.
Yep, yes. Rich is going to pack the Panada. So tickets available on our website at scotchmanpeaks.org/events.
Yeah, and I just want to thank you for having me. And I did want to put a little kudos out there to Mindy Farrell, our Winter Tracks coordinator in Sanders County, for a wonderful job that she did last Friday, and all of the volunteers there were wonderful, and the students had a great time. It ended up being a beautiful day, so I wanted to just
thank her.
Shout out.
It's just the start of the season. We'll have to have you back in at the end of the season to see if you have any more gray hairs.
Okay.
That's right. And thank you both for joining us, and good luck with the tracks, and good luck with Rich Sanders this weekend. Landers, right. Not Sanders.
Sanders County, Rich Landers.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Well, we'll move on to a short song break, and I think it's an appropriate one, Phil. Gene Mann with Dream of Goats.
We all dream of goats, don't we?
We do. And that was Dream of Goats by Gene Mann. I think an appropriate tune for today's topics, because we've just talked with Friends of Scotchman Peak, hearing from Britta Meyerly and Nancy Schmidt, both working there, and hearing about the Winter Tracks program. And for the second half of our show this morning, we're going to be hearing a pre-recorded interview with Rich Landers, recently retired outdoor writer from the Spokane Spokesman. And it'll be a bit of a preview of what's coming up Saturday night. And again, we're hoping that you'll all be able to join Rich and Chris Bessler at the Panada this coming Saturday. The doors open at 6:30, and the show will start at 7:30. It's quite affordable, so don't let that keep you from coming. And I think it'll be a great night to hear about a long and rich history in outdoor writing. And with no further ado, let's hear from Chris Bessler and Rich Landers.
Formerly from the Spokesman Review, a brief bit about Rich. He's plenty of stories to tell. He graduated in journalism from the University of Montana in 1975. He's worked with Field & Stream, Montana Outdoors, Runner's World, Pacific Northwest, Western Outdoors, and Popular Mechanics. He has also published guidebooks with Mountaineer Books, including 100 Hikes in the Inland Northwest and Day Hiking Eastern Washington. Rich has been recognized as the Conservation Writer of the Year by both the Idaho Conservation League and Western Environmental Council. Rich has also won the Ted Trueblood Award from the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. He has worked for four decades as the outdoor editor for the Spokesman Review. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Hey, it's good to be here.
And so one of the reasons we have you on today is soon coming to Sandpoint on Saturday, January 13th, you'll be here to do a presentation called 40 Rich Years in the Great Outdoors, a conversation with Richlanders. We're excited to attend that performance on Saturday night. Chris Bessler, publisher of Keoki Magazine, will be on stage for part of the show interviewing you, and you'll be doing some slides and telling some stories.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It was easy to compress 40 years into, you know, half an hour or
or a bit more. Rich, this is Julie Calamine, and I know that you're going to be sharing slides, amazing experiences on Saturday. Why don't you give us a snapshot of what we might expect?
Well, number one, it's not all about me, and it never was, and that's kind of the point. I am there and have a first-person presence, but my career has been all about other people and things that happened. And so I've been looking at things that happened, things I was involved with, trends that seem to form, and all of which are affecting people who recreate and enjoy and appreciate the outdoors. It's a big subject.
It is.
And we hope you'll have plenty of slides, having seen some of the ones published in the Spokesman. I'm very much looking forward to the visual tour.
Yeah, I think people will enjoy it. There's going to be a lot of places people have been, a lot of issues people have seen, some Sandpoint people that fit into the news going back 40 years, and I'm sure some of you still remember them.
Julie's hoping you'll give up your favorite fishing hole.
I sure am. Will you, Rich?
Of course I will, Julie, and then confess that I do lie about fishing.
Don't we all?
True fisherman.
That's right.
So for part of the evening, Chris Bessler is going to come on stage and have a conversation with you, Rich, to just let listeners know a little bit about Chris's background. He's the publisher of Sandpoint Magazine. Chris is also a morning show personality right here on KRFY. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Phil, thanks for having me. The word personality might be a little bit strong, but I do try. I'm here on the KRFY Wednesday morning show. Hey, Rich, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Phil kind of lined out who I am. I'm here in Sandpoint. I'm at Keoki Publishing. We publish Sandpoint Magazine. We also publish books. We publish some outdoor books. Actually, one of our authors and you and I had a beer years ago, Dennis Nichols. He's the author of The Trails of the Wild Cabinets and Trails of the Wild Selkirks.
You guys were still working on that project at that point.
Yeah. Well, those things take years, you know.
You bet.
So what we want to do here today is this is a just a short preview of some of the topics we're going to be talking about on Saturday when you're here. And we want to explore the many splendid aspects of your years writing about the outdoors here in the Inland Northwest. So I'm going to ask you a few questions that are probably going to come up again when we talk Saturday. So let's get a little preview on what you might have to say about some of these things. And I'll start with the impossible question, which is, can you name the number one story you've covered in your 40 plus years at the Spokesman?
Well, it's not as easy as you'd think. You know, I started before the internet. And so going back years with good stories, there were no clicks to count like we have now. In the recent years, it's so easy to tell what your popular stories are by the count of readers that shoots up on a board, electronic board we had in the newspaper. Going back years, it wasn't. One thing I will tell you, that there are certain hot button issues that that people really like or pay attention to. Like isn't the right word, and wolves is one of them. At the Spokesman Review, wolves was one of the topics that caused us to quit taking comments on our blogs and stories because it went crazy and death threats and all kinds of stuff. So I mean that's a hot one in terms of. Major political stories. I mean, I go back to the Sagebrush Rebellion and Cecil Andrus coming in after the Reagan administration and had launched that. it was anytime you're talking about public land, passions go sky high because public land means jobs to one sector and it means recreation to the other. And boy, when I look over the years, there's nothing that inflamed more passions than discussions of public lands, and Idaho is smack in the middle of that with the forestry and recreation that goes on there.
Yeah, and the Sagebrush Rebellion, some of our listeners may not even be familiar with what that was, but that was a movement that we're actually seeing again, right? To try to wrest federal public lands into the control of some states.
Yeah, James Watt led it in the 80s, and now it's Ryan Zinke. And Watt was more of a preacher, you know, brimstone and fire, you know, type going after it. Zinke is trying to do it a little differently, and it is a little different thing now. It isn't quite as widespread.
So, Rich, I know one of the public lands issues you've written about from time to time is wilderness, an issue near and dear to my heart. And I've had more than one person send me an old copy from something in the 1970s you wrote, a rebuttal to the then governor of Washington, Dixie Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, different politicians have different takes on this. Dixie was, of course, a character. And could really get headlines. You know, she had her style. And I, you know, it's one of those things when I see things in that get headlines and go out all over the country. If there's a misconception about something as important as wilderness, I wasn't afraid to take right after it.
You mentioned James Watt, and maybe this story is apocryphal, but I think I remember that he did a trip down, was it the Grand Canyon, and he got bored after a few days.
You know, I'm not sure which, but yeah, I'm not sure which trip it was, yeah. But yeah, and of course Reagan, you know, his boss was the one who said, "If you've seen one redwood, you've seen them all."
Yeah, exactly.
So they fit. I mean, they were a fit, but Watt didn't last 2 years, so. I think the writing was on the wall that, and people still have those passions that, hey, wait a second, public lands are very important to us.
Maybe you needed to go via horseback.
Yeah, it could be. I actually think he was on a raft. But okay, next subject here. You've already touched on this. Rich, answer this question. Wolves, good or bad?
They're both, and that's where I come from, and I tell you what, the scariest place to be on the wolf issue is in the middle ground.
You get it from both sides, right?
Yeah. Oh, I get it from both sides because I write about both sides. I mean, I've written about the people who are very passionate about wolves, and I've also written about the people who want to kill them all. But I give most of my emphasis to the people in the middle. You know, the fish and wildlife people didn't. You know, the states, for instance, didn't bring them here. It's just their job. Their job description is to manage wildlife, and it's native wildlife, and try to have ecosystems that are healthy and natural, and that's their job. Mm-hmm. So we have to. I have to support that, and they do a good job with a lot of sharp shooting from all sides.
Mm-hmm. You know, another hot button wildlife issue that might be pending, or maybe it's already here, is the potential to relocate grizzly bears in the North Cascades.
Right.
And I'm not sure what the status is there, but.
Well, the status was that they had taken a lot of 2 years of public comment, and they'd come up with four alternatives. They were reviewing the input on preferences for those four alternatives, which range from introducing certain numbers of bears and releasing them to just letting them come in naturally however they can come, which is the way the wolf reintroduction was designed at the beginning. So the Trump administration has shelved it for now, said, hey, quit looking at it for now.
And so I think
that's where it stands.
It's really interesting, having been an avid reader of your columns over about the last 15 years, to watch as you unpack a story from a journalistic perspective and yet have some skin in the game as a outdoor lover, fisher, hunter, hiker. And tell us a little bit about how that experience has been for you.
Well, I think it's sure, I guess to a point it makes me unbiased. But I don't think there's a way to be unbiased about keeping ecosystems whole. That's more science than bias. I use my experiences being out hiking, you know, and riding my bicycle across the United States and hiking long distance trails and stuff. And paddling. I've written a paddling guidebook, and you see all these things from the ground level, and you understand their importance and how you can't just take things apart a little bit at a time to serve man. I mean, you really have to think about it a little bit, and we don't always. I wish we learned from our mistakes.
Okay, next subject, our little preview here. What subject did you cover that elicited the most response or feedback from your readers over these 40 years?
Well,
and wolves, you've mentioned it right there, so we'll take that one off the list.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about personalities. I mean, you got to lump it into different things. Well, first of all, I get tons of reaction. Have received tons of reaction whenever I wrote about my family. And when I started off with a story about fishing with a pregnant woman. And, my wife, Meredith, was her first baby. I got tons of reaction from people about that story, mostly because so many people have been there, you know. I mean, been in the position of being a couple and one of them, you know, the woman pregnant. And it was just pure fun. And it was absolutely all true. I mean, there's one thing you never say when you're fishing with a pregnant woman is, look at that fish break water. You don't do that.
And your daughters.
And then when I'm with my kids, it's just if you haven't been taking kids camping or hiking and skiing, you're in the minority. I mean, most people can relate to it. And so I would get tons of reaction to those stories. I'd have to say those family stories really made a dent in my readership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
Yeah, your daughters really grew up in front of our eyes. Mm-hmm.
They did, and they helped me write those books. They were my most faithful, paddling and hiking companions. You know, we started the paddling guidebook in 50 paddle routes of the Inland Northwest, because my co-author and I, Dan Hansen, each of us had small children that were we were outdoorsmen. They were a little bit too little to go hiking, but we could pack them in a canoe and go almost anywhere. That was the genesis of that book and a lot of stories in the newspaper.
Did you pay them their modeling fees?
We paid them way more than they were worth. With a great college education, yeah. Now they're traveling all over the world. Each of them got a high quality down sleeping bag for high school graduation, and they're nearly worn out.
Yeah, great. Okay, another topic. Do you feel the government of Idaho is doing a good job tending to its wildlife and recreational assets?
I tell you what. I wouldn't want to criticize in blanket sort of way, but there's always room for improvement. I'll guarantee you that.
Specifically in wildlife, or it kind of breaks down into different agencies.
Wildlife is always rendered political. I mean, Idaho has a long history of making it political, but so does Washington. I mean, it's just because there's so many interests and values in it. And, certain things got shut down, like the whole game ranching thing that really threatened native wildlife and still does to some degree. But when it comes to the conflicts of bighorn sheep and domestic sheep, I mean, these are issues that affect people, who work on the land and affect people who value bighorn sheep highly. So those issues are strong in the legislature, and they, I just kind of wish Fish and Game had a more sure funding mechanism, sort of the Missouri model, that there's dependable money coming on, so they don't have to kind of bow to public concern. So they can just say, here's the science, let's manage these wild critters the best way we can. I wish it was that model.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more topic here for our little preview. You've been party to a huge change-up in journalism from print exclusively when you got started. Now the internet's a huge player. And the internet is kind of messing up journalism in some respects. How do you see the future of your former career?
Well, it certainly changed, and the influence is greatly diluted, but everybody's influence is greatly diluted. So it's kind of the way advertisers look at it, like, where do I put my money? Because there are so many options. Anyway, as a journalist, we're more, as I was winding up my career as a staff writer and editor, we're more stretched to put things online, to get things out faster. I saw a definite decline in the amount of time we had to do in-depth stuff, and that's frustrating to all of us who work in journalism. But that's just kind of the way it is, and people seem to be content with that. Because that's what they want, things fast. So I see Twitter being very important in moving stories and moving trends and tracking the way things are covered. I think that's sad.
And following the president.
Well, I'm not going to get into this. I think it's just sad. Yeah. And I don't care what your politics are, but to have the leader of the world. And maybe not so much the leader of the world by the time he's done with it. We might be second to China and everything. But just to watch that happen, where you have these impulsive things instead of thought out reasoning and disciplined reason, that's not good for us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and journalism in general. Now, you, in addition to writing stories that appear on the Spokesman website, you actually have a blog.
Yeah, my blog, I've closed it out now.
Okay.
I don't have the blog anymore because I retired December 1st, and I'm still writing for the paper, but I'm closing out the blog there. The blogs, can get you in trouble. but the people who read the blogs read them religiously because they knew they were going to get things fast and get things. I think a blog is all about being fast and providing links to other thoughts. And, I never hesitated to give links to positions that I didn't agree with. Let's let people see them all. And I take press releases and stuff and run them. I might run a comment, but I might write the whole thing and just let people see it. Mm-hmm. And, unfiltered, I didn't synthesize this. Check it out. See what you think. So I like blogs a lot. Mm-hmm. Just that I'm looking at spending a little more time free from that computer.
Yeah, yeah. And it, as you said, blogs are about speed, getting the information up there really quickly. And that means you're kind of married to your computer during the course of the day.
Yeah, and some people are. They're there, and I was when I was in the office. I spent a lot of time. I had a blog that was well received.
Well, Rich, there's so much more we could talk about, and we hope to hear a lot more on Saturday night. We appreciate the time you've spent with us this morning, and we look forward. I know I look forward to hearing more on Saturday. And Julie, why don't you close us out with some of the details of what to expect Saturday and how to go about coming?
Yes, I will, and I'm really looking forward to hearing about your plans for the future, Rich. I hope there will be more written material for me to watch for.
I got a few more.
I have a feeling you do. Well, for those of you listening and planning to attend the event, it's going to be here in Sandpoint downtown at the Panetta Theater. It's Saturday, January 13th. The doors are going to open at 6:30. The show is at 7:30. You can get tickets from Friends of Scotchman Peak online at Panetta Online, or you can also buy them in person at Eichhardt's. You may be able to find a few at the door, and you may also look for them at Bonner Books the night of the show.
Well, thank you, Rich. We appreciate your time.
Hey, it's been great. I'm looking forward to being at Sandpoint.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right. And that was our pre-interview of Rich Landers being interviewed by Chris Bessler from our own Wednesday morning show here at KRFY.org, 88.5 FM. So once again, I hope you will all be able to attend that event. It's this coming Saturday, the 13th of January. Doors open at 6:30 and the presentation will be at 7:30. This is Julie Calamine, your Tuesday morning show host. Phyllis had to step out for the morning, so I'll be finishing up with some upcoming morning show topics and upcoming calendar events. This week, upcoming morning shows are going to include on Wednesday, tomorrow, that would be January 10th, morning show hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. They will be reviewing the proposed Bonner County Natural Resource Plan with Commissioner McDonald. That'll be tomorrow, Wednesday at 8 a.m. here at 88.5 KRFY, Panhandle Community Radio. And on Thursday, I hope that you'll be able to join morning show hosts Jack Peterson and Carrie Logan. Their guest will be Rich Cretal. He is the director of the Sandpoint Community Resource Center. And again, that will be this coming Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY 88.5. The following week, I hope you'll be able to join Phil and me again on Tuesday, and we'll be chatting with the educators from both Boundary and Bonner County Extension Services. So we'll be talking about all things extension education. And then next week, next Wednesday the 17th, again, we'll be joined by hosts, morning show hosts, Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. And their first guests will be Sarah Clintworth and Jennifer Phils Crook from Euryades Village, who will give an update on their work in Ethiopia. A second guest will be Rebecca Holland. She's one of the organizers of the second Sandpoint Women's March, and that's scheduled for January 20th. So that's next Wednesday at 8 a.m. at 88.5. And I'll give you one more upcoming show and then on to some upcoming calendar events. Next Thursday, look for Jack Peterson and Jim Healy as your morning show hosts, and their guest will be Hannah Combs from the Pondere Art Council. And Hannah will be talking about their upcoming event, the Klondike. Then again, that's 8 a.m. next Thursday, 88.5. Moving on to some upcoming calendar events. Tomorrow, the 10th, there's just the conversation. All are welcome to share input during the conversation. That's held from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ivano's Restaurante. And the topic will be regarding the Inland Northwest Community Strategies Grant Program Awards to the Arts Council, Arts Alliance. Moving on to the 12th, we've got some interesting live music. That'll be David Raitt. Those of you who aren't aware, David Raitt is the brother of Bonnie Raitt, and he's with the Baja Boogie Band. That's at the Panada, 300 North 1st Avenue, and they're hosting a performance with David Raitt and the Baja Boogie Band. It'll be starting at 7 p.m. It is co-sponsored by Blue Sky Broadcasting and Edgewater Resort, with special room rates available for the Baja Boogie ticket holders. For more information on that, you can go to thepanada.org. Upcoming additional events. On the 13th, you may be interested in having a sustainable small farm, and if so, you should come to Starting Your Sustainable Small Farm. And this is with Bonner County Extension, 4205 North Boyer. They're hosting a sustainable small farm workshop series that's beginning January 13th with a combination of online assignments, 3 full day in-class sessions, and an end-of-class potluck on March 29th, plus at least two farm tours. This course helps new and aspiring farmers take the first steps toward setting goals, assessing resources available, and understanding how best to fit your land to your farm and how to make a success of your farm. You can find more information available at the Bonner County Extension website. Also on the 13th, American Heritage Wildlife Series is at the Clark Fork Library in Clark Fork, and January's program is Nocturnal Native Sounds. Find out who lives in the dark. That sounds interesting, and that is free. Then, on the 13th, is once again in the evening. It's the big event, Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness Celebration with Rich Landers. And as I've mentioned more than once this hour, doors open at 6:30 with the event at 7:30. That's at the Panada at 300 North First Avenue. And it will be an interesting discussion about 40 years of writing about the outdoors with Rich Landers. That should be a really good one. Then, for those of you who are interested in sports and sports for your kids, maybe, know that there is a youth basketball league beginning February 10th through March 17th. That's through Sandpoint Parks and Rec. And there will be practices and games played on Saturdays. There's a deadline of, yesterday, but maybe you can still get in. And if so, just get in touch with Sandpoint Parks and Recs. Then, additionally, if you're interested in synchronized swimming, the Parks and Recs also has, through Sandpoint West Athletic Club, a new activity for those who like dancing, gymnastics, and swimming, and it's synchronized swimming. You need to be at least 8 years of age and be able to float. Sounds like an important thing to be able to do for synchronized swimming. And once again, that would be through Sandpoint Parks and Recs. And finally, just know that there will be Twilight Ski and Snowboard specials at Schweitzer, and they're being sold via Sandpoint Parks and Recs, and they're non-refundable $10 lift ticket vouchers for evening skiing. I believe it's Friday and Saturday nights, and it's a good deal because it's not very expensive, and you can get a bit of skiing in if you're not a regular skiing and want to learn more about it and get to get up there and get skiing. And again, that is through Sandpoint Parks and Recs. With that, we're going to close out this Tuesday's morning show. Thank you again. This is Julie Calamine, and we will go out with a Joan Baez tune. It's her birthday today, and we'll play a cover of Bob Dylan's tune, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Have a great week.